Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Jarvis DeBerry, whose new book is I Feel to Believe, Collected Columns, and Kelly Harris DeBerry, whose new collection of poems is Freedom Knows My Name. They will be appearing at the upcoming Words and Music, a literary feast in New Orleans. Jarvis DeBerry is a household name to most New Orleans readers. After 22 years at the Times-Picayune and later NOLA.com, as a reporter, editorial writer, columnist, and deputy opinions editor, he's moved on to become editor of the nonpartisan Louisiana Illuminator. He was on the team of Times-Picayune journalist awarded the Pulitzer Prize for public service for post-Katrina coverage. He's also won awards from the Louisiana Bar Association, New Orleans Press Club, the Louisiana-Mississippi Associated Press, and the National Association of Black Journalists. Today, we're talking about his first book, a collection of his columns called I Feel to Believe. Jarvis, congratulations and welcome.
Thank you, Susan. I'm so glad for you to have me. I really, really appreciate the invitation. Thank you.
Well, I didn't realize until I read this that you originally set out to be an engineer. I'm so glad you changed your mind.
Well, like you see in the book, it kind of got changed for me.
Yeah.
Partly. It's kind of the story I have the best time telling about how I flunked an English proficiency exam my freshman year at Washington University in St. Louis. But, yeah, that really set me on the path to this. I mean, it just reminded me, having to take English composition, that it's really what I have always loved to do the most, is to put words together. And so when I got there, I was like, wow, this is what I really ought to be doing. So I'm glad I listened to that voice.
Oh, me too. So what was it like for you to go back over years of your work? Did you pretty much know what you were looking for, or did you surprise yourself with some of the things you found?
It was a really deep and reflective exercise. I'll have to admit up front that it wasn't a project that I was all that excited about. Initially, it seemed a little too backwards looking for me. I wanted to kind of, you know, focus on whatever I was going to do next and kind of keep my eyes firmly focused on the future. But when I went back and looked at the columns, and I don't want this to come off across as braggadocious, because I don't mean it to come so, but some of them are like, oh, that was actually a good column. I did very, very well on that column. Other things kind of put me in this, like, okay, you know, what was I thinking then? Who was I then?
Yeah.
You know, what has changed since? And so I didn't really know what I was looking for. And we went through a couple of different iterations. I think the first draft I submitted to UNO Press, I think it had about 150 columns, and I think we ended up, I think, with like 73. I think that was the last count.
Mm-hmm.
And so after I sent them an original batch, I actually, and they didn't have any restrictions on the size or the length, but I went back and I said, okay, some of these are redundant. Like I can't tell you how many Danziger Bridge columns I wrote, or how many police brutality cases I wrote about. But I didn't want the book to be repetitive, and I also wanted it to have a kind of narrative arc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like these are the things that were happening in New Orleans. So once I decided to really focus tightly on New Orleans and to tell the story of kind of those 20 years in New Orleans, it became a lot easier to curate everything. There were things I wrote about, whether it was my personal life or family members or other things, or even some national themed pieces, that I felt, although the columns may have been good, and I think they were good, they just didn't fit in with the kind of overall theme that we were trying to maintain with this book.
But weren't you surprised to see how much of your personal life ended up in the paper?
Yeah, and you know, that's the kind of life of the writer, you know.
Yeah.
You really can't separate yourself from your writing, or if you do, it doesn't make for very lively copy. And yeah, I think it is a bit surprising. Obviously, the very first column in the book tells a really traumatic story of my childhood. So yeah, so it's impossible to separate myself from my writing.
We'll talk a little bit about that first column, because that was really a bold subject. That very first sentence is an announcement of a voice. You know, it's very powerful and lets the reader know that they're dealing with somebody, you know?
Well, I appreciate you thinking it and seeing that way. Yeah, I can tell you exactly how that column came into being. I was in Mississippi. I had gone to Mississippi for the weekend. I was due to be at work at a time-sticking unit like 8 or 9 that Monday morning. And so I decided to get up that Monday morning and drive back. So I got up at like 4 a.m. and was taking a drive back to Louisiana. And I was listening to NPR. And a story came on about this case. It was a case out of Michigan where women were trying to get the N-word removed from Merriam-Webster's dictionary. And I think, if I'm remembering correctly, at that point, Merriam-Webster was, decided, no, we're not doing this, et cetera, et cetera. And so I remember, it's like, oh, well, sometimes they let a reporter write an opinion piece when it's not something specific to their beat. And so I'll see if they will allow me to write this. And yeah, that had been a really traumatic story, being actually hit with the racial slur myself when I was 7. And I had previously kind of tried to write that in an essay in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the difference is that essay was probably way too pretentious and trying to be like super duper literary. I just really got in the way of telling a story. And I think something about the length requirement of the newspaper column allowed me to say everything I wanted to say in that essay, in that column. And it was much more powerful, I think, just having kind of that length guideline. But yeah, I knew when I came into journalism, I wanted to be a columnist. Like I knew that like deep down in my gut. And, you know, I didn't know, you know, how that was going to come about. I didn't know what the break was going to be, but I knew I wanted to be ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that first column that they allowed me to write, I just decided, you know, I'm going to put everything I got into this and try to really show that I can do this, that I could be trusted with this. And I had not really thought about it, what my voice is, but I think you're right. You know, I was really trying to kind of tap into my most vulnerable self, my most opinionated self, and my most thoughtful self. I was trying to kind of combine all of those selves into one column.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Jarvis DeBerry, whose new book is I Feel to Believe, Collected Columns. And I'll talk a little bit about the title, which I love. It comes from your alter ego, Beatrice Real, Be a Real.
Yeah.
And she actually speaks those words. And I love her.
Let me say this, because we went through a whole lot with what the title of this column should be. And then we came to this, and the folks at UNO Press and Kalamu and Io at Renegade Press were really, really excited about it. And then after we decided on the title, I remember like going through for like a second read and say, oh, those words do appear. So it's better that I actually have those words in the column. But more than just it being voiced by Be Real, you know, it was one of those phrases that I struggle the most with.
Uh-huh.
I got to New Orleans and I heard Black people in New Orleans talking, And as I say on a page in the introduction of the book, I first thought these Black people I was hearing in New Orleans were saying that they failed to believe something, because they would say it so quickly. Somebody would say what they failed to believe, or what that's what it sounded like.
Mm-hmm.
I realized they were saying that they failed to believe something. And I just think that's just a wonderful phrase. And the fact that so many Black people in New Orleans use it so frequently to mean that they really, really strongly feel passionate about something.
Right.
I feel to believe that the Saints are going to win tomorrow. Like that
right.
kind of thing. Or, you know, I feel to believe that Bush should have done better by us in doing Katrina, or et cetera. So it just felt like the perfect phrase
mm-hmm.
to kind of introduce the collection, but also to, like, locate myself in Black New Orleans.
You and your wife, Kelly, are going to be the keynote speakers coming up at the Words and Music, a literary feast in New Orleans festival. So I wonder if you'd say a few words about literary culture in New Orleans and what events like this festival mean to all of us.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, New Orleans is such a epicenter of literary culture. We have so much culture in this city, and I think sometimes that our contributions to the literary world get overlooked. But it's hard to imagine a city that has kind of attracted more people, entranced more people, beguiled more people than New Orleans. And it's always really been not only a great breeding ground for writers, but also one of those places that seems to attract writers from all over. And New Orleans is just a fascinating and captivating place. For me, it has definitely been the place where I grew up, and not only grew up as a person, but also grew up as a writer. Were it not for the NOMO Literary Society and Kalamo Yasalan's leadership of that workshop, I don't know what kind of writer I would be. And so those kinds of things, that you can always find people who are writing about, thinking about, you know, these beautiful and wonderful and quirky things that we love about New Orleans. I think Words and Music Festival, which is so aptly named,
mm-hmm.
is just a perfect celebration of writing and writers in New Orleans. I'm really looking forward to it. I know Kelly is really looking forward to it.
Because
I think she will also say, she's from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm from Mississippi. And I think both of us can say quite honestly that New Orleans has had a great influence in shaping us into the writers that we are today.
And we're lucky for that. We're really lucky. We've been talking with Jarvis DeBerry, whose new book is I Feel to Believe. And I feel to believe you should read it. You can meet him when he appears with Kelly Harris DeBerry Thursday, November 19th at 5:15 as the keynote speaker for Words and Music, a Literary Feast in New Orleans. For complete information, go to wordsandmusic.org. Jarvis, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. I've enjoyed it.
Holy Moses, I have been removed. I have seen the specter. He has been here too. Distant cousin from down the line, praying to people who ain't my kind.
Kelly Harris DeBerry is one of the poets and activists the New Orleans literary scene could not do without. Not only is she a brilliant spoken word artist and poet, but she's our local coordinator for poets and writers, and she serves on many community boards and organizations. Her beautiful new book is Freedom Knows My Name from Xavier Review Press. Kelly, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Thank you, Susan, for having me.
What a beautiful book this is in every way. I mean, it's gorgeous to look at, wonderful to read. It feels like you're at the height of your power.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that, especially in this pandemic, that there's still some power and energy that people are connecting with. So thank you very much. It's been a long journey to this point, and I am happy with the book.
I searched a lot for words when I was thinking about this book, and there's a sense of fullness and roundness and the way you're bringing every aspect of your life to bear on every moment of every poem. This is a collection that's filled with all the feelings that poetry has to offer, it seems to me. Great grief, great joy, close examination, calls to action. How do you feel in terms of your own work when you put together a collection like this?
You know, you never really know how a book will land in the public space. You only are kind of working inside of yourself with the page. I really try to create what I felt was something that I consider it kind of quilting. And there's four sections in the book, and I was really trying to thread various themes inside of the book and hoping that it all was connecting, even from the cover, as you can, people who are listening, the cover has images and kind of flowers, but also imprints underneath those images that tell a story. And so that's what I was trying to do with this book. And so far, so good. I'm very grateful that things have been doing pretty well considering, you know, the times that we're living in.
Now, in many ways, this is a tale of two cities, these poems. Cleveland, where you're from, and you write a lot for your friends in Cleveland, and New Orleans, which you say is the city that helped shape my womanhood joy. That is such a lovely, lovely description.
I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, in the Midwest, but I really believe that I kind of, to borrow maybe Michelle Obama's becoming, I became many things in New Orleans, a mom, a wife. And so I was trying to blend both of those and give an acknowledgement to both cities in this book as well.
Well, speaking of womanhood joy, one of the big aspects of that is being a mother.
Yeah.
And you are a mother to a fierce and smart and beautiful daughter, Naomi. And I wonder if you'd read Weird Am I?, which is a poem you wrote for her. I think every mom identifies with this particular moment.
Sure. Weird Am I? For Naomi. How could they know the word for your light or what a human can do? Anyone can string the alphabet together, make you laughable, hold two fingers behind your head. You are not alien orbiting their planet. I wish you antennas and a small voice in your head beyond the universe of your school days. Imagine yourself outrunning all the laughter chasing you and throwing it in the air like confetti, or whatever second graders throw when happiness is in their hands. Who knows if you're good weird or bad weird? Could be you, most worthy, wonderful, called out its name.
Every mother has had this moment. Who knows if you're good weird or bad weird? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Now, we're living in a time in which writers are stepping up to the plate and really meeting this moment. And this is one of those books that doesn't ignore reality, I think, but propels us more deeply into it. And you seem to want to lift people up with this book.
Yes. The title, Freedom Knows My Name, really comes from a place of me pondering. There's always this pursuit of collective freedom. And I feel, particularly as women and as a Black woman, sometimes there's a sacrifice made for the collective freedom. And oftentimes, the individual doesn't always get to pursue some of the things that they want, particularly women and mothers. And so the title is kind of a reminder to myself that freedom knows who I am, also. It is a reminder that we are all in pursuit of something. And that whatever that thing we're pursuing, our name is right on there. It hasn't forgotten about us. It is waiting to be pursued and is waiting to be unveiled. And so in this book, there are the collective kind of poems, some protest poems, things of that nature. But within that is also the individual stories of people and places that help us get to freedom. And it was important to me that I tried to capture that as well in the book.
Mare Kurifayo, Indiana Red, Indiana Red. Here comes my spy boy, spy boy.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Kelly Harris DeBerry, whose new collection of poems is Freedom Knows My Name. I'd like to talk about one of your New Orleans poems, which I love so much, and that is Super Sunday New Orleans. And this, to me, captures one of the great moments in our city's culture. And I think about what it must it have been like for you to see Super Sunday for the first time.
Yeah, one of the interesting things, I'm writing a piece about it now for another project, was the popular brass band song Casanova, because that song is rooted in Cleveland. And so when I first heard it in New Orleans, I was like zapped back into time.
Wow.
With the group Levert was the original group that made that song. And to hear it just be totally transformed into a collective party song was really just, you know, something to experience. And so I feel very lucky that I've had kind of a dual experience of that song. So this poem is called Super Sunday in New Orleans. Black people, ordinary royalty, crown themselves in bold-faced streets, tip their heads back into unpredictable sides, dance between bad days and bright feathers, gold teeth, sweaty women squat low and death on this unbreakable city, burdens laid down under the bridge, on a porch, on a rooftop, is how you fly away for a moment, a lifetime. Trumpets and trombones point back at God. This is the sound of the people who came through bloody waters, afloat on faith and ancient drums, dancing to remember how to unchain the body, return it to the sea of freedom. Look at this Sunday. Unspeakable joy, all the glory, all the footwork.
Oh, I love that poem. I love it. How to fly away for a moment or a lifetime. Oh, Kelly, that's amazing. We've been talking with Kelly Harris DeBerry about her new poetry collection, Freedom Knows My Name. You can hear her read and speak when she appears with her husband, Jarvis DeBerry, presenting the keynote address at Words and Music, a Literary Feast in New Orleans. That's Thursday, November 19th at 5:15. Check out wordsandmusic.org for complete details. Kelly, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The Festival of Words, headquartered in Lafayette, will hold its annual poetry festival November 6th through 7th online. Join authors Robin Ha, Erica Meitner, and State Poet Laureate John Warner Smith for a series of Zoom events. Go to festivalofwords.org for more info. Cocktail journalist Tim McNally discusses and signs his book, The Sazerac, Saturday, November 7th from 2 to 4:30. At a COVID-safe book signing at Octavia Books. Mask and social distancing required. Laura Cayouette appears in a Zoom conversation with Henry Griffin to discuss the second edition of her book, No Small Parts. Tuesday, November 10th at 6. Go to Garden District Bookshop to register. Clint Bruce discusses his book, Afro-Creole Poetry in French, from Louisiana's Radical Civil War Era Newspapers, in a virtual Gallier gathering, Wednesday, November 11th at 6 p.m., sponsored by Herman Grima and Gallier Houses. Go to hggh.org to register. Grammy-nominated musician Deej Legg discusses his book, Cablog, Diary of a Cab Driver, in a Zoom conversation with R. Reese Fuller, Thursday, November 12th at 6. Go to GardenDistrictBookshop.com to register. Akasha Robot signs her book of New Orleans photographs, Death, Magic, Abundance, Saturday, November 14th from 1 to 3 at Blue Cypress Books. This is an outdoor event, socially distanced and masked. The 7th Annual Bayou Soul Literary Conference for Teen Writers, November 18th through 20th, based in Baton Rouge, will be virtual this year with a full slate of writers and performers. Check out bswliteraryconference.com to register. It's all free. Words and Music, a literary feast in New Orleans, is coming up November 19th through 20th in a new online incarnation. Check out wordsandmusic.org for complete schedule and information. Jarvis DeBerry and Kelly Harris DeBerry discuss their work in a keynote appearance Thursday evening with Melissa Braden Perry. Poet Nii Osundari appears in conversation with Christopher Romagara Thursday morning. Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Tayemba Jess will read Friday evening, and the event concludes with a tribute to New Orleans writer Tom Dent. There will be presentations on such topics as the life of Leah Chase, Queering the South, LGBTQ writers on home, love, and history, Immortal Lives in Speculative Fiction, and the Modern Memoir, to name only a few, along with many musical performances. Support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, and the Hillis Foundation. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.